To the Razzball Prospect Podcast. I'm Michael Halpern, here with Ralph Lifshitz. And I just want to start off, I hope you saw under Longenhagen's on Fangraph's last article, his top 23 Cubs prospects. I thought it was hysterical. The final guy was this guy, Bailey Clark, and Longenhagen wrote he had a history of injuries and a violent delivery and stuff like that. And then his father, Bailey Clark's father, commented basically saying, yeah, I've been following his career since T-ball. I could assure you that he has no long list of injuries. And, you know, Longenhagen, and he said, I love your write-ups. The guy's a big fan of Longenhagen. I mean, we all are. You guys know that. But Longenhagen was like, oh, God, I'll fix it. And I don't know. I just think that's hysterical that, like, you know, family members are reading some of these posts and are like, what the fuck, talking shit about my kid.
Oh man, it's a kind of a fear of mine. I'm like still waiting for me to trash somebody like this. Like when the Philly write-up comes out on Sunday, like Nick Williams' dad is gonna like hit me up and be like, yeah. "What's going on, Ralph? You used to be a big Nick Williams fan, and now you're just being a dick." Like, oh, thanks, Mr. Williams. Sorry.
Yeah,
I don't think I'll be as gracious as Longenhagen was. Obviously, the Clark's father was obviously very, very gracious about it. So
yeah, it was like a very heartwarming comment. You know, if you read it, it's hysterical, and it's a slow build to see that he's his dad. At first, you think he's like a bandwagon Cubs fan. You're not really sure what's going on in the beginning.
Yeah, I like when he said became a Cubs fan last June, and then it like you're like, oh, that makes sense. The draft, yeah, okay,
exactly. It was like layers upon layers where you had, you know, you were figuring it out as you went. I loved it.
Yeah, it was like Inception. I say that when things are complicated. I actually couldn't make it through Inception other than like a half hour because I'm not very smart. So
I wasn't a big fan of that movie. Yeah, it was all right. It just seemed like, yeah, he just made it really complicated. I was like, great, all right. I like his other movies, you know, his like Batman, the first couple Batmans with Liam Neeson. Those are great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I feel like this is going to be our movie version of our jelly donut comment when we said that they were filled with chemicals. You guys didn't like Inception? Damn it. I'm not listening to the podcast anymore.
I don't know. I think that's done. Although I've gotten into real arguments with my friends over Inception.
Really?
Back in the day. I mean, a long time ago, but. Yeah, some people, they think it's like one of the greatest movies of all time. I'm like, what were you watching?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I don't know. My friends and I don't argue about anything, really.
Nice. You save it all for Razzball?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't think I argue with that many people. I kind of save it for people in my day-to-day life that I actually meet. And I think maybe from time to time on Twitter. I don't engage in any more Facebook debates. It's a bad move.
Yeah, Twitter debates are all right, though, you think?
I think so, because most of the time I'm arguing about, like, prospects or...
I love.
Yeah, or somebody, and it's usually, like, you know, comes from a good place. Or it's, like, hitters or pitchers or people hating on the Patriots, you know. But even then, I don't think I engage too bad.
Your Rick Porcello argument with some guy on Twitter was hysterical. I was cracking up.
I don't even remember that, to be honest.
You don't remember that? Shit.
No, I don't. I don't remember my Rick Porcello comments.
Yeah, just some guy. You were like, Rick Porcello, I don't think he's going to repeat his year. And some guy was basically like, the Cy Young Award winner? What the hell are you talking about?
And I like Rick Porcello. And I really like Rick Porcello. I mean, my wife grew up with the Porcellos. I think I've told you that before. They're from the same town. And my brother-in-law played football with Rick Porcello's older brother.
Nice.
By a few years. But I want to mention this in the podcast because it's a hilarious story from my personal life. Before we get into the Oakland A's prospects, obviously that's what we're going through today, coincide with my post from Wednesday. But somebody that I grew up with that was the biggest pussy in my neighborhood is now a semi-pro wrestler. And he joined Facebook a few days before his pro wrestling debut. And it's hilarious because he's on Facebook as his name, and then in parentheses it has his wrestling name on there.
Which is?
I'm not going to say, because just in case somebody that listens to this and somehow puts two and two together, fuck it, I'll just say it. It's Knight Rider. His name is the Knight Rider. So it has his name, and then in parentheses it says the Knight Rider. And his picture, his Facebook like profile picture, is like a really – I'll send it to you after the podcast – a really cheesy picture of him, like trying to look really tough. And like, when I tell you that, like, everybody in my neighborhood beat the crap out of this kid at least once, I'm not lying. Like, he was like the mouthy small kid that would start fights, and then like he'd get the crap kicked out of him, and then he would show back up with like, he'd always make friends with like the biggest kid in the neighborhood or the biggest kid at school. And now he's a professional wrestler because he's been living, he's 35. About to be 35, and he lives in his parents' house, and he has a personal training business. He runs out of his parents' garage. I'm not kidding. And and he's a professional wrestler now, and it's great because, like, he's straight up, like, he's a rich kid, so he straight up, like, has, like, the gear like he's in the WWE. Like,
that reminds me of the show John Glazer Loves Gear. I was going to ask you, what is his gear? Like, what's his outfit? Is he a mask guy, or is he, like, tight?
Not a mask guy. He's, like, you would think he's very much built like X-Pac, so he's, like, small, but he's, like, ripped. Right. You know what I mean?
I got you.
And he's got, like, the tights on, like, full-length pant tights with, like, boots, but the boots are very strappy and, like, patent leather. And he's all black, and he's got a black t-shirt that says Knight Rider on it. It's really funny. And then, like, there's other pictures, if you dig back, and like some pictures from his girlfriend who's been on Facebook a little bit longer, cause I'm that kind of person that once somebody joins, I got to creep on him, get some background. Cause I haven't heard from this dude in probably like 10 years. And, there's like pictures of him, dude. And he's got like a beard, and it's like, I'm going to say it's for the old school Red Sox fans, probably Reds fans as well. If you remember Dustin Hermanson, he was a relief pitcher for the Red Sox. Had this really screwed up looking beard. It was almost like a shark's mouth. So this dude had a beard, and it was like for a little while, and it was shaved like a shark's mouth.
All right. Well, he found his calling. Good for him.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, not after that getting, I can really say, you know, anything. I mean,
it's better than going the other way, getting bullied, you know, feeling like shit about yourself. You might as well say, you know what? I'm going to become a professional wrestler. I love it. I love the passion.
The funny thing is, he was the kid that, like, he was really mean to, like, people that, like, growing up. Like, he was mean to, like kids with problems, poor kids.
All right, so he was kind of a bully.
He was kind of a bully, and people would just, like, stand up to him and, like, then would just slap him, you know, but because he was mouthy. It's weird. It's a whole complicated thing, but either way.
No, I guess that's the cycle. That's the cycle. You get bullied, you know, then you bully people. So, you know, that's how it goes, unfortunately.
Yeah, just because of where I grew up, I now grew up with two convicted murderers and a professional wrestler. It's kind of fun.
So overall, you're doing pretty well. Fantasy prospect analyst? I think you're in the top spot right now.
Yes, and real life insurance professional. Yeah.
You can go to Ralph for all your life insurance and prospect needs.
I don't sell life insurance. I can do personal insurance, and I focus on commercial insurance. If you own a business, please call me. Please leave me some comments. I want to sell some stuff to you.
So that's what we call synergy, the insurance and prospect business. You know, they're two peas in a pod.
Let's talk about the A's, man, before I got to go pick up kids.
I like it. Yeah. So Oakland A's, right off the bat, I'm interested in Franklin Barreto. And basically, he was getting a lot of hype until he had a down Arizona Fall League. And you look at guys like Gleyber Torres and Cody Bellinger, who had great Arizona Fall Leagues. You know, Gleyber had a solid regular season, and then just obviously he was the MVP, and he hit like over 400. Mm. And his hype is now through the charts, whereas Barreto went, he was probably a little tired. He got moved up to AAA at the end of the year. He played through the playoffs, minor league playoffs. So he got there. You know, his swing wasn't quite as quick and short as it was earlier in the year. The numbers were not good at all. And even though he had a strong second half of the season and all that, all the scouts watch the AFL. So the scouts go there and they make their determinations. And sometimes I think that could sway where these guys land on prospect lists, basically how they do in the AFL. And the pitching is kind of erratic. So I don't know. Like Gary Sanchez had, you know, I think he had like 10 homers in the AFL. Everyone rightly was like, all right, something clicked. Josh Hader looked great in the AFL. The velocity uptick, and it stayed. So you have to take the stats. Sometimes they do mean something, but I don't know. So I was curious, like, how much emphasis do you put on AFL reports and stats or versus, you know, guy's entire season? Because I think Barreto is pretty tight to Glaber, but it seems like now Torres, I mean, he just basically wowed everybody in Arizona, and that's it. He's on, you know, he's on the upswing on these lists majorly.
Yeah, and I think when it comes to the AFL, I think you got to look at it more as a value bump than it is a value deterrent. There's guys that have had bad Arizona Fall Leagues and then were really, really good prospects and became good MLB players. But I think that it's more like with the Gleyber Torres stuff, he gets a huge bump. And I think a lot of it is real baseball, because the problem with Barreto is Barreto doesn't really necessarily have a natural position where people see him matriculating to the major leagues and fitting in there, where I think everyone's like, yeah, well, if Torres doesn't play short, he can play second base, but he's a legitimate shortstop prospect. The power took an uptick. There was some stuff with hitting where Barreto's always sort of been an offensive first player. And there's been some talk of, hey, you know, he's probably not the shortstop long term. Maybe he moves to second base, which I think is probably the most likely position for him. And there's some other folks that think he's going to be eventually a center fielder. But he's an up-the-middle player. I think there's some of the defensive real-world baseball and tangible stuff that goes in with that comp, when, you know, in terms of Glaber really rising up lists and Barreto dropping down, where both of them were in sort of the same neighborhood, we'll say, at the end of the season in a lot of lists.
Right. Or yeah, you see what I'm saying.
Including
yeah.
for myself. I think there are some, if I can get into Barreto a little bit here, I think there are some very good things. I think, you know, the hit tool is good. He does have some power. There's obviously some speed as well. I think, you know, the overall, you know, he's an athletic player. He's an exciting player. So I can see wanting to own him in fantasy. The downside is, as many bases as he stole this year, I mean, he did get caught 19 times in 52 attempts. So there is some talk that as his body has sort of strengthened and thickened up and matured in the middle, and he started to drive the ball a lot more. And by the way, he hits to all fields. This guy is in a pull hitter. He does have a good hit tool. I've seen it rated between 55 and 60. I think that's probably his carrying tool. But he has some attractive fantasy skills as well. But getting back to my original point, as his body's thickened, as he's improved his hitting, his speed has gone down a little bit. So I don't think this guy is the burner that we thought he was. Sticking with the Oakland Athletics, they are a team that does not like to run. It sort of flies in the face of the Moneyball philosophy, giving up outs, that whole thing. They were actually one of the only team that was not a playoff contender that was in the bottom five or six in stolen base attempts last season. Where conversely, if you look at a team like the San Diego Padres, who's equally as bad, they run like crazy. You know, and for example, Will Myers is a player that never ran before and all of a sudden started to run. So I think team environment will sort of, you know, cap his ceiling in terms of speed as long as he's with the A's. And I think, you know, I gave a projection that I think, you know, in his height seasons, he's going to be he could be a leadoff hitter. He'd be a one or a two hitter with maybe like a 280 average. You know, the homers are probably somewhere between 12 and 15 and, you know, probably steals about 20 bases. I wouldn't expect more than 25, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing so on my website, imaginarybrickwall.com, I'm starting like my off season. I'm doing a top 200 ranking this year. Because going through it, I didn't want to stop at 100. It was just ridiculous how many exciting prospects were past 100. So I'm going 200. I have Barreto right around Gleyber Torres still. I still have him at 30. You watch him, he has a really quick, powerful little swing. And it's line drive, like you said, and he's gaining more power. He's still been really young for his level. I love him, even if he doesn't stick at shortstop, because I don't really think Torres is going to stick at shortstop either. So I hope he's still on the infield somewhere. Second base is possible. Outfield would be worse, even though if he could be a good center fielder, you know, that'll work for them. But I still think he's got a great bat, equal to Torres' bat. I guess maybe on these real-life lists, they're giving the defense bump. It's very possible. I don't know. I kind of think it's the Arizona Fall League bump where the scouts go, they see him in person, and then that's where a lot of the opinions are made, just on a small sample size. And I get it, because that's what the scouts are paid to do. They give their look. But I don't know. There's a long season's worth of stats, and there's other video you could look at. I don't know. I'm not sure the AFL numbers. I mean, he had a 22% strikeout rate and a 2% walk rate in the AFL. He was toast. So I'm kind of giving him a pass, even though I do see him kind of dropping in certain opinions. Next guy, AJ Puk. I know you're a Puck, you're down on Puck, and we've talked about him a lot. Actually, you know what I thought was funny? In your article, I saw Clint, you know, our man Clint, who's tweeted us a few times, got Cody Pints to retweet something he did about our podcast. So that was cool. Clint mentioned he listened to the Baseball America podcast. And those guys, I didn't listen to the podcast myself, so I'm taking Clint's word for it. But he mentioned that, you know, the Baseball America guys were razzing Oakland a little bit about some of their developmental strategies, but also said they were kind of rehauling Puck's mechanics, which I took that as a positive, not a negative, because he needed a rehaul of mechanics. It's not like he was real goofy and gangly when you watch him at Florida on the mound. I mean, he was intimidating. He's a big dude, but it's not like the cleanest, most athletic delivery. So I take it as good news. And Oakland has a great history of taking these guys who have control problems but can strike guys out and turning them into useful pieces. So even if Puck is maybe like a 5.1 inning per start guy, I don't know. I like that. High strikeouts, better for fantasy. So I'm kind of in on Puck, even though I know he's not your top guy.
Yeah, he's not my top guy. And I think I'm lower than other people on, but I don't hate AJ Puck. It's nothing like that. I think the range of outcomes with a player like him is very, very wide. He absolutely has high ceiling, as high a ceiling as any pitcher that was in this draft, just about any pitcher in the minors, that if he figures it out, if he gets some of those mechanics in line and he can repeat his delivery and his command and control take a step forward, yeah, I mean, this guy has frontline starter sort of potential. But I also think that he could just end up being kind of a washout with great stuff and it never totally clicks. Or he could be a guy like Andrew Miller that maybe bounces around and it takes him a while to figure it out. And eventually he figures it out in the bullpen and becomes sort of that elite pen piece. He's got that stuff. The thing with Puck is, like you said, the mechanics are wonky. And he's not the most athletic guy either, which is relatively speaking. These guys are professional athletes. It's not like I can really say that they're unathletic. I mean, I work out a lot and run and do all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, yeah, I'm not like a superior athlete. Obviously, he's athletic enough. Yeah. But
I can go on some mean pickup basketball streaks when I get hot. You know, I feel good. I feel like I'm LeBron out there, but, you know, I can't dunk.
Helps on fire.
Basically, I get my mid-range game going, you know.
Exactly. And sometimes I feel really good when I'm doing pull-ups and push-ups and squats and, you know, running a few miles. But in the end, I'm just an old white guy trying to work out and make sure
that I'm fatty. And then you see Benintendi with the chains.
Oh, dude, Benintendi with the chains. Oh, my God. I need to go to the bathroom. Yeah. I'll be right back.
I need to rub one out. find the Benintendi with the chains videos if you guys are listening and haven't watched it, because it's just a classic. I don't know, it's just great. I love these workout videos now, kind of with these prospects. They're great.
It's so funny. In one of my fantasy leagues, big shout to all my Mass baseball guys. I actually was watching the Pats game with them last week. We were talking trades the entire time, and all of my buddy who's in the league, all of his friends that were there just to watch football, were like, "You guys shut up about baseball."
So with the dude, so often with me, I'm so with you.
So my boy posted that he was willing to listen on Benintendi. And I immediately posted the video of Benintendi with the chains. And he was like, thanks for the hype, Ralph. Thanks for the hype. But back to AJ Puck, the range of outcomes is huge. I love the upside here. I really do. And if you take him in a first-year player draft, I don't think it's a bad decision. It's maybe not what I would necessarily do. But I think you guys got to understand the inherent risk that is there with Puck, that he just doesn't figure it out. Or Oakland might be the right organization. I think it's funny. You know, Baseball America was knocking them for what their plan is, but they do a great job of sort of getting the most out of a lot of their prospects. I mean,
yeah, that's what I was just saying. Yeah.
Josh Donaldson wasn't a huge prospect, and they made tweaks in his mechanical swing, and he became an MVP and one of the top hitters in the game. And Ryan Healy last season was sort of an off the radar. I mean, I don't even think he was he even in like Baseball America's top 30 for the A's, and all of a sudden he makes these mechanical tweaks and bang, he's in the major leagues and jumps a few levels. So
they developed Drew Pomeranz as a, you know, guy that they were calling a bullpen piece into a starter that just landed Anderson Espinosa. Oakland takes these, you know, quote unquote bullpen guys. They're like Ellis Island. You know, they just get everyone gives them their, you know, they trade for all these small righties, all these bullpen pieces, and then they end up good starters. I don't know. I like them too. I'm with you.
Can I segue you? Can I give you the boom? Oh, man, Ralph, that was a great segue.
You might have ruined it already. You might have, but go for it.
There's actually a really good third base prospect that they drafted in the first round a couple years ago. who's making his way to Oakland, could potentially be in Oakland this year. That's a line drive hitter that they turned into a power hitter. That would be none other than Mr. Matt Chapman.
Yeah,
what do you
course.
Think about Matt Chapman, man? Hit me with some Matt Chapman love.
Matt Chapman love? Well, for one, usually defense doesn't matter at all. You already alluded to it. But the fact that he's going to be an above-average third baseman means his bat's staying in the lineup. So he struck out 173 times in AAA this year. I don't have the number of games on me, but it's ridiculous. This guy strikes out a lot. His power is huge. Literally, watch him on YouTube. The guy just swings the bat like he's just chopping wood, and he just looks like – they only list him at 6 feet. He looks bigger than that. At the plate, I don't know. He gives a bigger presence, but I love him. I have him as the second-best prospect in this system. I draft him over Puck. I love the fact that he's definitely going to stick at third. They're not going to start this platooning bullshit, and, you know, he's just a power bat that only does that. It's kind of getting devalued now in free agency. See, a lot of these power bats – aren't getting a home. Chapman could play the D. That's why I give him the bump over some of these other strikeout guys, and I'm gonna stick with him, even though he is the class. I mean, 173. His average dipped to 197 at AAA after dominating AA. So there's serious concerns. Again, it's kind of like Bradley Zimmer. He's gonna be a plus center field defender, so I think he's gonna keep him in the lineup and give him a shot to work it out. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think it's even more value because he's a legit third base, you know, defensive third baseman. He's got a great arm. He knows how to play the position. You know, he's going to move Healy off of that position. He'll, you know, Nunez has no shot of sticking there. And I know they've had other third base prospects that are sort of in the system. We'll probably get into some of them later. But yeah, Chapman's got that boom boom. As I said in that my Oakland post this week, if you take a look, I actually linked a couple of videos of two different
I did.
Home
I saw
runs.
Those.
One hitting a Ray Black fastball, 98-mile-per-hour fastball. Ray Black is a guy that throws serious gas, and he booms it. Like, he hits it like, you know, 400 feet to left field or something.
Yeah, he looks like a beast at the plate. I love it.
Yeah. And then he tomahawks another one, like, dead center. Like, he hit it in the pitcher's eye like a tomahawk swing. I mean, he's got serious power, and that was kind of a knock when he was coming out of college. I think he came out of Was it Cal Long Beach where he went? I think it was Cal Long Beach.
Look it up in 2 seconds.
All right. Well, you look it up in 2 seconds. I'll go into him a little bit. He was the leader in home runs this
too slow.
Year.
Cal State Fullerton.
Cal State Fullerton. So I had right state, wrong state college. But anyway, this guy led the minors in non-Redding aided homers. I said that in my post as well, because obviously the two guys ahead of him were Dylan Cousins, Reese Hoskins. Neither of those guys have the power. We'll go into them next week when we do the Phillies and the Pirates, but neither of them have the power that Chapman has. I mean, Chapman has serious, legit power. He plays a good third base. He's not too far. As long as the contact issues don't get out of hand, he's almost like a better defensive Joey Gallo kind of player.
Exactly. Perfect description. I mean, it leads to me the perfect segue to, you know, Renato Nunez, who is going to get moved off third. He's still one of, like, I love his hitting. He was signed as a big-time international free agent, I think $2.2 million for his pure hitting skills to begin with. He dominated in winter ball, just crushing winter ball completely. And even though he only had like 690 OPS at AAA in the PCL, still hit 23 homers, still had a respectable 21% strikeout rate. I don't know. He's going to be in my top 100. I still think this guy's got the goods to be very, very good. He's an underrated guy I'd be targeting in fantasy. I did try to target him actually in our 30-team league, and unfortunately, the guy that has him also values him very high, which I get. And when I talk trade, I don't try to like devalue guys. I'm not like, oh, Renato Nunez down year, he sucks now, bro. Trade him to me. I'm always like, yeah, I love him. Good winter ball stats. You know, had a slight down year. You know, maybe I won't pay full price. What do you think? And then, I don't know. He liked him, but are you still sticking with Nunez?
Yeah, and I think I like Nunez more.
Than Chapman?
Not more than Chapman, but I'm saying I like him more than I did a year ago.
Oh, okay.
And I think that he sort of fits in with Chapman and Healy and Nunez, and maybe if he can ever get it together, Olsen as well, as sort of, you know, future potential offensive stars in Oakland. And I don't think Nunez is ever going to be a star player, but I think he'd be a very good above-average hitter. Probably will hit for some average. He has power as well. I think there's certainly a range of outcomes, but I think that his floor is relatively high. without having an absurd ceiling or anything like that. I mean, he's, like I said, I don't think he's going to be a superstar. I think Chapman's ceiling is higher. But I do like Nunez. I think he's a good hitter. I think it's the best way to describe him. You know, he's got contact ability. He's got power. You know, he does walk a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. I know that the slash line took a little bit of a hit this year, but it was a good sign that he seemed to be, recovering a little bit from a somewhat rough 2016 in winter ball.
I guess I should wait for the Phillies episode, but I kind of want to bring it up because we were going to do Phillies and Oakland tonight, but we decided to scrap it because they just have too many prospects. But I was looking, did you realize that Dylan Cousins got into a fight with his teammates in winter ball?
No, I didn't hear that because he was in the Dominican Republic, or was he in Puerto Rico?
I'm not sure. One of them. Yeah, not the AFL. In one of these leagues, yeah, outside of the United States. So one of his teammates and Boog Powell from Seattle Mariners were ribbing him about the fact that he couldn't hit a breaking ball because he was hitting under 200 in winter ball. He had a bunch of homers. But so his teammates were ribbing him, making fun of him, not being able to hit a breaking ball, and he physically tagged him. He broke down.
that is hilarious.
I mean, I know Keith Law brings up that he has, I guess you could say, maturity issues, mental makeup problems. And I mean, I don't know, a little razzing about his breaking ball problems, and he's attacking teammates. I don't know what that says.
Wow. That is not good.
Maybe. That's beyond anything. That's beyond Kopech. I mean, you have to worry about Kopech's problems. He's never had anything like that.
No, not at all. That's hilarious, man.
Yeah. So what do you think about Matty Olson, similar type of player to everyone we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's sort of like the typical Oakland A's player where he's got huge, huge walk rates. I mean, you know, he's got 16%. I think it's 16% walk rate throughout his 3,000 professional at-bats or 3,000 professional plate appearances, or nearly. He had that monster power year in the Cal League back in 2014. He's only had 17 home runs or so since then, and he's struggled a little bit to find himself. You know, they've moved into the outfield. You know, defensively, he kind of doesn't really necessarily have a position either. He makes a lot of weak contact. I mentioned that in my post. He had a 12% pop-up rate this year. That's really bad. I was really into Olson a year ago. If you look at my top 100 rankings, he was, I think, right at the back end of the top 100 last year, and he's definitely dropped off the top 100 for me. He could have he had a cup of coffee in Oakland last year. I assume that he's somewhat in their plans, but yeah, he's somebody that I'm definitely down on. I don't know. Do you feel the same way about Olson?
I'm a little down on him. Like you said, he had, you know, when he was in the lower minors, he had 23 homers one year and then 37 in the Cal League. When he got to the upper minors, double A and triple A, he had 17 2 years in a row. And the profile is the same, still three true outcome guy, but hasn't got to his power quite as much. I do like that they're playing him in the outfield a little more. You think maybe he could get some outfield eligibility? Oakland always does look for guys. I assume he's going to get at bats at some point. And he's still pretty young. He's not that old.
Yeah, I figure Healy ends up moving over to first base. I guess if Healy doesn't move to first base, then it might be Olson. My thought is that Olson's probably an outfielder. But yeah, I mean, the thing that's weird about him is he's a patient, like, you know, approach guy that has really high walk rates and hits for power, but he makes a ton of weak contact, which kind of doesn't make sense. Those guys usually don't make a lot of weak contact. But I think a lot of it has to do with his swing path and the swing and miss to his game. I mean, it's bad, but it's not absurd. I mean, I think he had a 24% strikeout rate, which isn't, you know, this day and age, it's not terrible. It's not like he's a 30% strikeout guy or a Joey Gallo type or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, the bad contact is really more of a worry for me than anything else.
You know, let's move on to pitching because I think their most – I have him as their number one pitcher, Jarrell Cotton. I think he's ready to go. Last year, I was contemplating him for my top 100 last year, but the Dodgers were – you know, have so many starters. I was like, you know what, they're going to use him in the bullpen. Oakland, obviously, we've beaten this horse already for – we talked about Oakland – on multiple podcasts in the sense that they give these guys shots. He had a 10.3 K per nine and a 2.6 BB per nine in the PCL. His ERA was a bit inflated, but I give that as PCL inflation. And in the majors, he had a 2.15 ERA, and his stuff was sick. Just he had multiple fastballs, got the changeup going. He always gets knocked for, you know, his size and everything, and kind of he doesn't have that great breaking pitch. I love him. I think he's going to be pushing my top 50. I think he's a damn good pitcher, and he should be ready to go right off the bat, right?
Yeah, and he's a guy that's totally on my radar in redraft leagues. I like Cotton a lot. I think I had him rated behind Montas and Puck, but I just think that the upside with those guys is a little bit higher than what it is with Cotton. I think that he's a mid-rotation guy that could potentially have some decent strikeout numbers, once he sort of hits his peak years. The thing that I love about Cotton is that changeup. And he said he doesn't have a great breaking pitch, but he has a very good changeup. His changeup might be his best pitch.
Yeah,
he throws that thing. He's got some screwball action. Take that, Brent Honeywell. What's up? Not the only person throwing some screwball stuff. But like you said, he throws that from the same arm angle that he throws his four-seamer and cutters and his two-seamer as well. So he mixes it up. He hides the ball well. Though he is a small righty, he's relatively thickly built. So I have confidence that he's going to be a very good professional pitcher. And I think that with Oakland, the park the way it is, some of his flaws will probably get nullified a little bit because he's a fly ball pitcher, a lot of fly ball contact. He is a bit homer prone as well. That's really the big knock on Cotton, is that he does give up a lot of homers, but he gets a lot of pop-ups as well. So, those big foul grounds there at OCO, I wouldn't be shocked if, it cushions his ERA and whip a little bit, but I like Cotton. I think that, in deeper leagues, he's definitely somebody that you want. He's definitely ownable in any leagues that are head-to-head pitching, anything that's pitching-centric, and probably with those league 12 team, and then any format that's 14 teams or more, he's a good back end of your rotation piece.
I think I might be a tad higher on him than you, because I just feel like he's got more potential. He's got more strikeout potential. It was always a high K guy in the minors. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's only proximity, I'm saying. There's a little more upside there, even though I do, if I had a bet on what he's going to be, yeah, he's probably going to be a solid mid-rotation guy. So I'm with you in that sense. But I think there's maybe a little more upside there. Would you take – so you're saying you take Puck over him. And you don't hate Puck, but you don't even like him that much.
I think it depends on the context. See, stuff like that is tough because a lot of my rankings, I don't just – put what I think either. I think, Puck is a surefire top 100 guy. I don't think Cotton's going to be in a lot of people's top 100s. I think Montas will be on more top 100s probably than Cotton is.
Yeah, because, Cotton's the small righty. He's going to get dinged for that right off the bat. He's a changeup guy. They love curveballs. I don't know. I just feel like I think that opinion's valid. Montas is a huge dude. Puck's a huge guy. They're both huge guys that throw fast. All right, yeah. I'll rank them higher too. But I don't know. I just feel like Cotton's got something. Could be wrong.
I almost had Cotton ahead of Montas, and at the last minute, I had Cotton lead my second tier, which is floorboards, because I think that he's a higher floor guy. I just don't think the ceiling is as high as it is with Montas or Puck.
You're definitely right. So you don't think Montas is going to be a bullpen piece?
I think he could be a bullpen piece, but I think he could be one of the best closers in baseball, kind of a bullpen piece, and that's not such a bad prospect either.
That's not too bad. I mean, going to Montas, so you wouldn't – I would struggle taking a guy that if I think he's going to be a bullpen piece, I don't even know – even if he could be an elite one, I don't know if I would take him based on that. I would kind of try to shy away from those guys.
Because I'm such a fence sitter, I'm gonna break down and qualify my answers. If I'm a non-competing team or I want to build up just prospects and it's like a Genesis draft, so it's the first original draft of a dynasty league, I probably would take Puck before Cotton. I think Cotton and Montas would be pretty close for me. If I'm a competing team, I would probably take Cotton over both of them.
That's fair. That's very fair.
I'm probably not going to get Puck anywhere anyway. But anyway, as for Montas, he obviously has been moved a couple times in the last year or so. He was originally moved to the Dodgers from the White Sox in the Todd Frazier trade. Had an injury last season, ended up not pitching. He's had some struggles with health and control. A lot of that comes down to his delivery. I think those two factors have called his future as a starter into question, though the A's and the Dodgers both wanted to proceed with him as a starter. So, the A's, he was one of the three prospects with Cotton and with somebody we'll talk about in a little bit, Grant Holmes. Came over in the Rich Hill, Josh Reddick trade. So it was a good grab for the A's, another arm that they have. He's got nasty stuff. He's got a power slider, and he's got that really big fastball. I mean, that fastball has huge velocity. You can touch triple digits with it. You know, the big question with him, and I think this is what it is with a lot of these prospects, is sort of a generic thing to say, but whether he sticks as a starter or ends up as a high leverage reliever, back end of your, you know, bullpen reliever, closer, eighth inning guy, setup guy, is whether he develops that changeup or not. If he develops that changeup, and a lot of scouts do believe that it could become a plus pitch, that it's got the stuff there, he's throwing from the same arm angle as his fastball, then he could definitely be a front end of the rotation, front line, number one, number two kind of a starter. Big swing and miss stuff. He's always missed bats throughout his career. He's interesting to me. I think I'm a little bit higher on Montas than other people are. I see the upside there. I see the ceiling.
Well, we might as well complete the trifecta with the third piece in that deal, Grant Holmes, who I have below all these guys. He's former 22nd overall pick. Kind of hasn't improved since he was drafted. He's still the same guy who, you know, throws hard, got a really hard fastball, but command is an issue. The secondaries are still kind of an issue. And he still gets ground balls, but there hasn't been, he hasn't gotten better. So I don't know. Where do you put these guys that get drafted high, still have the electric stuff, but they just don't improve? How much time are you going to give them, basically? Grant's still very young, but I do have him dropping. And I loved him last offseason. He was like, he was the top high school righty taken in the draft he was taken, something like that. He was one of the first high school pitchers taken with electric stuff. I think I had him around top 60 in my offseason one, but he's off my top 100 just because there's no improvement.
Yeah, the ground ball stuff is encouraging. I mean, 55% ground ball rate. He gets a lot of weak contact. He throws everything low in the zone. The thing that I struggle with is his numbers were bad in the Cal League. Both stops that he made last season were in the Cal League, which is notoriously hitter-friendly. So I think that knocks him a little bit. He's got major split issues. He had a .303 batting average against left-handers last year. So that's a bit of a problem. I don't think he has as much upside as the other. I like Cotton more than him. Absolutely. He's kind of destined to be a floorboard. The one thing I think he has going for him, but also may also be a knock because the Dodgers traded him, is I think they've drafted the last seven or six of the last seven, with Holmes being the seventh prep pitcher that the Dodgers have taken in the first round, has made the major leagues. Clayton Kershaw being one of those, Billingsley being another one, and there's others, you know, mixed in there as well. But they traded him though. So I don't know if that's because they are stocked with so many arms that they still have too many arms for all the spots that they have available, or if it's because they don't have a strong belief in him as a player.
I would say it's definitely that they know. I don't know what they thought about when they drafted him in the first round. But to me, with the group of prospects he got traded in, you know, the kind of fringy, they're all good, but they're not like great pitching prospects. I kind of think they probably value him in that group. I don't think he stood out as one of the top trade pieces from that trade. I think he was just one of the three.
I actually probably value him less than the other two.
Dang, I have him as the low man on that and below Puck. So yeah, we're on the same page with that one. Oakland actually has some really good underrated hitters too. First guy that everyone's, you know, throwing a parade for, Max Schrock. He's the, for any Fangraphs reader knows, Carson Cistulli favorite. It's Cistulli's type of favorite prospect to a T. I think I wrote up Schrock before Cistulli got to him, but I'm still going to give Cistulli credit because when I went looking for those type of prospects, I was like, I'm going to look specifically for a Cistulli prospect, which is elite contact, you know, good speed, and emerging pop. So that's basically what Schrock has. And Schrock actually had a little pop in college too. He was in the SEC and he hit six homers his freshman year. And then he hit five and then he hit six his, you know, sophomore and junior year. So there's a small amount of pop. He's showing the elite contact and he's got speed and he's up the middle. I don't know. He's really good. I think he might crack the back of my top 100 or maybe just miss. But he's a guy that I'm also really high on. I think he's going to be good. I mean, the guy can hit, and he's got a couple other fantasy-friendly skills too. Even though he's small, but he's shown some power. I don't know. Are you not on this Schrock underrated bandwagon that everyone – I'm not the only person. A lot of people are on it.
Yeah, I didn't write him up just because there were so many guys I wanted to write up in the Oakland. That's what sort of happens is I kind of pick and choose, and I hit a certain amount of words, and I'm like, all right, I can't, I got nothing left. But anyway.
Dude, everyone, first of all, your write-ups are great. Your Oakland one was great. Everyone realizes that it's a grind. These write-ups are a grind. The fact you're doing this, people could look at your list when they're drafting. It really is. I know. I think everyone appreciates it. Truly, I think people do.
Except I still have to add the Miguel Andujar blog blurb that I wrote the other night and then forgot to put it up because I came back and decided to be the drunk Patriots fan that edited my article. And then I opened it up the next morning and was like, oh, my God, this is an abortion. This is awful.
I disagree. I disagree. Your Yankees write-up was funny as hell. You wrote in the beginning. You're like, I'm just back from the Patriots game, drunk as hell, writing. I thought it worked with the theme. I loved it. I liked it.
It was pretty funny. But as for Schrock, yeah, I mean, just look at the how low his strikeout rates are. This guy seems like the ball can't miss his bat. You know, he doesn't even walk a ton. I mean, he walks a decent amount, like 6 or 7%, but that's like around the amount that he strikes out. I mean, he's a very low strikeout guy. He's had very high averages. I don't see any reason why this guy couldn't be a 280 to 300 hitter in the majors. And he's got enough power and enough speed to make him interesting. You know, he's not like Chad Pinder, who I'm really not all that interested in. I think he's a better version of Chad Pinder, but he's a lot less underrated than Chad Pinder.
Agree completely. I mean, do you want to go in on Pinder real fast?
I think I just did, didn't I?
Done. I feel you completely. That's what I have on Pinder, too. Basically, he's going to do – I wrote he's going to do a little bit of everything, and then I wrote he's going to do a little bit of everything. It's going to be very little bit of everything.
Yeah,
not much there. Actually, a guy in your write-off who I got kind of excited about reading, Jorge Ruiz. Is that how you pronounce his first name?
Yeah, I think it's probably Jorge Ruiz. I think that's an HG.
I agree. So he signed for $2 million. What do you think about him?
Yeah, he's another small righty, so you know that Ralph loves him. But, you know, there's some talk that he has some bullpen risk, and I wonder if it's just because he's a small right-handed pitcher. He's been – every write-up you'll read about him, he gets described as a bulldog. If you watch some of the tape on him, he does some kind of a wonky aggressive delivery. He throws with a bunch of different arm slots, though, which I love. And he's got a really interesting repertoire of pitches. So he has a few plus pitches. He's got a mid-90s fastball with some really nice late movement. Like I said, look him up on YouTube. You'll see that fastball jam in there. It really sneaks up on hitters. He does a good job of hiding the ball. He's got a plus changeup. He's got above-average offerings in the slider as well as his splitters. He's got four above-average to plus pitches. The control is very good. He's been sort of lauded as a control guy. And he put up really good numbers in Cuba's Serie Nacional now, which I know we should probably take with a grain of salt. But I always feel like the pitcher's numbers aren't great when I see guys come over here. But in 375 innings, he had a 2.55 ERA, and he's only 22. So he's not all that old, at least, or he's a Cuban 22. So maybe he's 24. I have no idea.
Exactly. But,
you know, everyone sort of praises his makeup, his stuff, his pitchability. He's a ground ball guy. As I mentioned in my write-up, I don't have any data to go on with that. I'm just reading the scouting reports, and that's what I've been told. So I'll buy into it. Now, pitchability, ground ball ability, he's got nasty stuff, and he's a bulldog and a competitor on the mounds. And he's close to the majors. He's not that far away. And he only signed for $2 million. I think it's a great deal. And I've seen some lists, actually, Jesse Sanchez, who's the international prospect writer over on MLB Pipeline. He's as good a job in terms of scouting the international classes as anybody. He's got great details. It's all he does. It's a full-time job. He also speaks Spanish, which probably helps him out a lot because he can watch some of his other broadcasts, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, he loves him. He had Ruiz rated above Morjan, and he had Ruiz rated above Gutierrez and some of the other arms, you know, Cyanel Perez and some of the other arms that are getting some hype in the international class. So I think that Ruiz is an underrated pitcher. I mean, I'm in my first-year player draft in that 30-team league that sort of mirrors the 30-team league that we're in. I'm in a few of these 30-team leagues. I know I'm a nut. But he hasn't even gone. It's the third round. And Gutierrez and some of these other guys have already gone. So Ruiz is still sticking around. He might be somebody that's under the radar in a lot of your drafts that you might be able to pick up. And a lot of people think he's going to start the season in Double A.
I mean, after your write-up, I looked into him a little more because you were so pumped on him. And I obviously was on my radar. But I was looking at him. When you watch, he's like this one of these pitchers that are fun to watch, like you mentioned. He's got a funky little delivery, got different arm angles. He looks like he just got that art of pitching down. And he reminded me of an old Yankee pitcher, Alfredo Aceves. I don't know. He pitched for Boston, too, where, I don't know, the guy's just a bulldog on the mound. It just looks like he's got an aura, a presence. He knows what he's doing. I fell in love with Ruiz, too. And Oakland, like, they signed for $2 million, and they had to pay double that for their luxury tax. So they paid $4 million for him. And Oakland doesn't just throw around money like it's nothing. So they like the guy. I mean, they paid up for him, and everything Ralph said is on target. If you watch him, you'll fall in love with his pitching style, too. You could tell he just loves to pitch. I don't know. I love it. I love those type of guys that get on the mound. I don't know. There's a certain – it's like the eye of the tiger. There's a certain demeanor where you're like, dude, you know what? This guy – it's no joke, though. It's like this guy's just doing it. So I'm with you. You got me pumped for him, and he looks like a player. He's just one of these guys that looks like a player to me. One of my favorite sleepers, real deep sleeper. I wrote him up. I wrote a sleeper post on him, Chris Arriaga. He's a first baseman. Got drafted. He was a 12th round pick in 2015. One of these guys, young first class. So his birthday, you know, was late in the year, and he struggled his first taste of pro ball. But in this year, he started off pretty solid. Then he got smacked in the face with a 93 mile per hour fastball right to the grill, where they always show the Twitter picture right after, where him and Chase Vallett. Chase Vallett also got smacked in the grill with a 93 too, same exact mile per hour. And then they post on Twitter what their faces look like. It's great. Hysterical. I love that stuff. They're all banged up. But these guys are warriors. He came back in July. He shook some rust off, and he dominated down the stretch. He had 10 homers in his last 30-something games into high A. They advanced him in the Cal League. He's 21. He's age-appropriate. And he raked. He's going to be a first baser DH. I really like Iriart a lot. You know, some of my favorite sleepers, along with, you know, Vladimir Galindo is another guy I love and is similar. And just in this latest write-up by Eric Longenhagen, Longenhagen mentioned Galindo loved the power, Longenhagen said. But he mentioned it's basically he didn't like anything else. He thought his swing was a little stiff. And obviously the defense is a question. So Iriart's kind of like that, where the swing is a little stiff and the defense is a question. He's not one of these extremely athletic guys with great bat control, but – in my opinion, these power hitters who have great bat speed and great raw power, and they're not like – they don't have no athleticism. I mean, these guys could play a little bit. I think there's a spot for them. They remind me of guys like – you know, I just had a list off the top of my head that I wrote down before the show, just like Brandon Moss, Adam Dunn, Mike Napoli, Evan Gattis, even Tommy Joseph, Matt Adams a little bit. Yeah. These guys have a spot. So they're not going to be your first-round picks, but these guys are power-hitting guys. And when they have that type of swing, in my opinion, it's kind of like a machine. They just bang it out the same every time, which is maybe what some guys don't love about it, because it's not quite as, like, you know, fluid and flexible. But I don't know. I think these guys have a place in the majors, and I think Iriart is that type of guy. And I believe in him. He's a deep sleeper, and I'm not saying he's going to be a star, but as this type of underrated guy, none of those guys got hype, really. Napoli, I mean, these guys weren't top 100 guys. Brandon Moss, Adams, Joseph, none of them got hype, probably for the same reason. So I just feel like I want to defend some of my sleeper picks a little bit on the stiff accusation. And they are stiffer than the other guys, but I don't know. I think there's a spot for them.
Yeah, I forgot to add him to my write-up. I think I'm going to add him tonight, and I'm just going to link to your post about him.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm not kidding. I think I'm going to do that. But you know what? I also – something came to me that is probably a great idea if you're looking for guys off the radar in some of your deeper leagues that have deep minor systems. Guys like Iriad are perfect because he's probably going to start the season and play most of his year in the Cal League, and he's a power prospect. So if you can find power prospects that are going to start the year in the Cal League, there's a solid chance that if these guys in your league are doing number scouting for deeper players, all of a sudden this guy's value is going to significantly jump. He's going to be somebody that people want in trades. So I think that's a great suggestion by you, and I actually think that Iriad is somebody that all of our listeners should probably try to add in their deeper leagues.
Yeah, I love that thought, that you get these Cal League power guys and the numbers are off the charts. Yeah, you're right. You want to talk about someone a little different, get some more athletic excitement going, Lazaro Armentaras?
Yeah, so we got Lazarito. I'm excited as somebody who's a soccer fan that we finally have a nicknamed baseball player with an Ito at the end. We have all those sort of guys. I mean, you know, if you watch soccer, there's a lot of guys with nicknames like that. So I'm glad that we finally have a young prospect to dream on. He's got the flash. He's got like a clothing brand. He had the whole wacky background thing going on with the Harrison family. They were his representation. And then they said there was some sort of seedy Cuban mafia kind of connection. You got to look into it. I'm not going to
look into it. It was a death threat, right? Didn't the representation get a death threat and then he found a new representation or something?
Yes, I believe that the Harrison, so like Scott Harrison, Jerry Harrison, those guys, I believe that they own like a professional team in like Puerto Rico or something where he played. There's some connection there that he had some, that was their representation, and then there was a death threat and he ended up turning it over to whoever's his representation now. But you know what? Like
it
I said, worked. Google that. I don't want
to. It worked, right?
Hey.
It worked.
It did.
Right? So fucked up.
It did, but that's why I'm trying to move on, man. I don't want these people coming after Prospector Ralph. I don't want a bounty on my head.
Until we start trying to sign these guys out of the Dominican and Brazil, we'll be all right. But once we start getting the game, that's someone's turf. I guarantee that's someone's turf.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's the Cuban hype machine, though. I mean, this kid had so much hype that if you were in first-year player drafts, so you could take this guy last year, you know, where it was like anybody in the entire player universe was available. Lazarito, just like Lourdes Gurriel, and we'll get into him next podcast, or pretty relatively soon we'll get into Lourdes Gurriel. But anyway, the thing with Lazarito is he would have went like in the top 10. I think he actually went like relatively early or no, actually I own him in that Bright Baseball Prospectus League, so he was already picked up. So forgive me. But anyway, he had a ton of hype. The tool grades are great. I mean, you look at the tool grades, he's like a 55 to, you know, the 60 in the hit tool, same thing on the power. He's got speed. I mean, if you look at the guy, he's an absolute specimen. He's got that Yoan Moncada, like, you know, football player playing baseball kind of a build. I mean, he's ripped up and jacked. But he's super far off. There's definitely a lot of risk there. I haven't seen a whole lot of tape of him other than his showcases. And I know that some of the reports from the showcases have been spotty. Some people liked him. Some people thought that, you know, they wanted to stay away from him. So certainly the hype was not what it was. He ended up signing for $3 million, so he ended up doing all right for himself out in the open market. But I don't think that the competition to sign him was quite as high as you thought, and the A's signed in him and ended up signing him at a discount. What's your take on Lazarito?
Seems like the Cuban hype's gone the other way now, the backlash.
Yeah.
I feel like our podcast was maybe the started off the Cuban backlash the other direction. Of now these guys don't get the benefit of the doubt at all. Like our boy Jorge Ona, I know we both love him. In BA's recent top 10, they were saying he has a stiff swing, comparing him to Dayan Vizcaíno. You know, used to be they were all compared to Cespedes, and they were like, these are going to be the greatest players ever. Yeah. Now they're all going to be the bust. So it's somewhere in the middle. I like what Lazarito's the classic toolsy international signing guy. Mm. You know, tons of tools, fast, could play up the middle. Will it work out? Who knows? But decent shot in a really deep draft. I don't know if I'd have him at the top, you know, like you mentioned, but he's in the mix as one of those crazy toolsy guys.
Yeah, in that first year player draft, I think he actually ended up going like later in the first round. So, you know, the hype was definitely down in him.
True. Another guy who is, in my opinion, underrated, not toolsy, kind of the opposite, but he was their second round pick in 2014. Daniel Gossett, right-hand pitcher. Like I said, I think he's getting slightly underrated. The numbers were great at three levels of pro ball. He was 23 already. Ended up with an 8.8 K per nine and a 2.2 BB per nine, mostly using, you know, two seam fastball and good control to get grounders. But when you watch him, he's got like a weird little hitch in his delivery. So I kind of understand why scouts aren't higher. But again, you look at the numbers, second round pick. I don't know. I think he's getting a little underrated. I think he could be a decent mid rotation ratio guy. Did you get a chance to look at him?
Yeah, and he's knocking on the door too. Yeah, I took a look at Gossett. I know that like Baseball America and a lot of these lists have him ranked really high. He's been
I didn't even realize that.
I thought he was 7 or 8 in Baseball America's, but I might be wrong.
He's not underrated. My bad. Fuck that.
Yeah,
up.
I think he is. I think for fantasy, he's definitely underrated. He's somebody that's not on a lot of people's radars. And you know, like there's players. It seems like particularly pitchers that are sort of these mid rotation back end of the rotation players that come up with Oakland and have a good streak every year. They had a few of them last year with, what's his name, Dave Mendigan or whatever, the guy with the mustache.
Yeah, Mendigan, Daniel Mendigan. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's always guys like that sort of pop up with the A's. And I think he's one of them. I don't think he's a bad piece to own at all. You know, he put up good numbers in the Double A last year. I mean, the The K per nine was 9. You know, his walk per nine was 2.3. He's a ground ball guy, doesn't give up a lot of hard contact. You know, 2.49 ERA. The whip was pretty good as well. I think you mentioned that was 1.06. The numbers were good. I mean, he's where he should be. I don't think he's going to be the most exciting guy. I think he's set the world on fire, but he could definitely be somebody that, you know, could come up and give you some innings in a deeper league and, you know, shouldn't be completely off your radar.
Yeah, kind of a similar style to that. Logan Schorr, who was their second round pick, and also Florida. Oakland must have scouted Florida. I saw you talking Schorr up a little bit. I know you like him. What do you think about him?
Yeah, and I actually had said to Smokey at one point that it wouldn't shock me. We were having a conversation. This was before the draft even happened. And I'm saying Schorr is their Friday night guy. He's been their Friday night guy. Yeah. And Puck is probably the third best pitcher in that rotation. And I'm, you know, with obviously next year's potential number one, Alex Fado, you know, we'll probably talk about him in a podcast a few months from now when we start to get into our pre-draft podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun. But Fado's a big one. Schorr was their Friday night starter, and he was for a couple of years. He's a pitchability guy. The stuff wasn't bad in Vermont. I mean, he got some strikeouts, but he's a guy that pounds the zone, you know, throws a ton of strikes. You know, he really knows how to pitch. He's one of those art of pitching guys, like you said. But I think he'd be a number four starter with good ratios. He's got two above average offerings, the fastball, changeup combo. So he's a change over a curveball guy. Judges a slight, you know, the scouts don't like as much as if he was a slider or a curve guy. I think he's a good back end of the rotation type of guy. He's definitely on my radar. And we'll see what happens. He was actually Puck's roommate at Florida. So they enter pro ball together. You know, they were in college together. So it's kind of interesting. I wonder if they take Fado if he's in the board next year. They get all three of them.
I'd love that. Why not? They could just reinvent Florida. How far did Florida go?
I think they were a College World Series, but I don't think they advanced all that far. I think they were, I don't think they were out in the regionals or anything. I thought they made a College World Series, but I can't remember. I forget like who wins and cause I'm into it when it's going on and it's more to just watch the players. I'm not cheering for a team. I went to a small college up here. So, I mean, it's not like I have a team or I'm not invested like that. And maybe if I went to a Florida, East Carolina, is that who won this year? Was it Coastal Carolina? I can't even remember, you know? I think Arizona had a good one. You know, Dahlback had a good, you know, was actually as a pitcher had a good College World Series. But I follow college baseball to watch the players. So if the games are on and it's a team and I know a player that's on there and I want to scout them out a little bit, you know, like I watched a lot of Vanderbilt last year to maybe see Sheffield or Reynolds and players like that. But yeah, I mean, you know, overall, I couldn't tell you where the hell they finished.
I'm exactly with you. I think I remember Puck not pitching well down the stretch, which he went from like a number one to he dropped. I think people thought he was going to drop even past Oakland, but Oakland scooped him.
Anytime that Puck pitched well, he was the number one pick. And anytime that he pitched poorly, he dropped down to like, I don't know.
So true. After every start, his stock was like a heart attack. That's so true. That's funny.
People wanted him to be the number one pick. That's
I think
why.
They did, because there wasn't a consensus, and he was 6'7", lefty through 100. They're like, this guy should be the fucking number one pick. But
yeah, exactly.
You know, he didn't step it up. Another guy, just keep your eye on for next year for sure. Heath Phil Meyer. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's a recently converted shortstop, and he throws 92 to 96, good sinking action on the fastball, solid curve, developing change, you know, not that much experience, and he's got some raw tools. So you see a guy like Brock Stewart came out of nowhere, you know, as a converted third baseman, I think. So Phil Meyer, I think, could be another one of these guys. Do you want to talk about, and we're kind of wrapping up at the end. Do you want to talk about a few of your favorites at the end here? Quick hits?
I think there's some other players to keep an eye on. I think Dakota Chalmers might have the highest upside of the pitchers that we haven't mentioned. There's guys like Dalton Jeffries.
He's in my 30-team league, Chalmers. When I took over, he was already on the squad. So
I looked him up and saw that he was owned by you.
Yeah, he's not bad. I don't love him, but he's not. When you I was looking at his delivery, it's hard to see ever much control and command coming. He looks real raw on the delivery, but
really raw.
You know, I guess he's raw. I mean, that's why they call him raw. So he's got some tools, though. But yeah, go for it. What else you got?
R.A.W. Dylan Overton's another guy that maybe might be on your radar this year in some deep release because he could get some starts with Oakland again. Paul Blackburn's another guy that some Oakland prospect files really like. But
yeah, 6.2 K per nine on him. Yeah, you know, kind of just a back end type, but for sure.
I was going to mention Bruce Maxwell, who got some love. I think he was in the top 10 Baseball America list. He was actually
he was a second round pick of the A's back in the day. So he's got some raw talent from back in the day still kicking around there. I think he's a little older, but he hit well in the majors too. Hit 283, I think.
Yeah. He popped up in the back end of Gray's catcher rankings too. I was like, "Oh shit."
He really? I didn't even think shit. I read all Gray's rankings. I don't even think I slipped my mind.
He was one of the last names that was just like listed.
Yeah. What do you think of Dalton Jeffries, their first round pick this year, 37th overall? You know, their supplemental one, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's another guy that's like his ceiling is sort of mid rotation piece, you know, or he's a back end of the rotation pitcher. I mean, he's not an ace by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think a whole lot about Jeffries. I probably wouldn't own him unless he was just sort of hanging out there. I needed to get some pitching depth in my minors. He's not somebody I'm real excited about. I don't think he's going to be a fantasy stalwart or anything like that. You like how I mixed in stalwart?
I like it. We just seamlessly put stalwart in there. Yeah,
I could have called him a magnate. I think I called Olsen a walking an on base magnate. Somebody I called an on base magnate.
What's the definition of magnate? I just know magnate. The connotation of like a. Like a business magnate, like a big shot.
Exactly. You're like a big shot. Yeah, that's what you do. I made all my money in. I'm an iron magnate.
Yeah, made all my money in casinos. You know, I do it honest.
Yeah, exactly. Honest money. You know.
Marcus Brito is another guy. Signed for $1.1 million bonus this year. Switch hitting shortstop, hit tool guy, but you know, long term spec to keep your eye on.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, what do you think about Richie Martin? I know he was one of the shortstops taken in the all shortstop class of 2015, but he's like the least exciting fantasy player. He's like a glove up the middle guy, not really hitting. You know, there's no hit there or anything. He's like Reese McGuire as a middle infielder.
Took the words right out of my mouth. I'm not into these glove first shortstops. I hate the Kyle Holder pick by the Yankees. I don't know. Maybe I'm undervaluing as a first round pick. Well, you know what? You can take second. In the third, fourth round, you can start sweeping up on some of these big-time college hitters. So maybe you do take the random high tool guy in the beginning. I don't know.
I saw Holder this week ranked as the all-defensive shortstop on the MLB Pipeline prospect team.
I know he gets plus defense. I don't watch him every day. I feel like he's got to be one of those guys that are like, he hits so bad, they just give him defensive accolades. You know what I mean? He's just such a bad hitter that they're like, you just talk about his defense. Maybe it is really plus-plus. I don't know. It's possible.
We'll see. And I'm going to mention one guy I featured in my write-up, and I think he's sort of the offensive, sexy, you know, I guess he played in Double-A last year, so he's not all that far out. But Yrario Muñez, he's a, you know, sort of has a nice mix of hit tool, power, speed. Had an off-season motorcycle accident last, leading up to 2016.
Really?
Delayed his season a little bit.
With helmet or without helmet?
I don't know if it was like without helmet, Ben Roethlisberger, state of Rhode Island style.
Threw a car and it's fine. It was like, I just went through a car with my head. I'm good, guys.
No big deal. And I've seen a lot of scouts describe him as flashy, but it seems that he sort of lacks like baseball knowledge and intangibles and all that sort of stuff. But for a fantasy perspective, if you can get to the majors, the bat's good enough, the offense is good enough, he could be a late round flyer that you grab in dynasty leagues if he's not owned, or somebody could pick up off the waiver wire, as like a throw in a trade. You can dream on a little bit, you know, if you can hold on to him for another year or two. He could be kind of interesting. He's got some power. He does have contact ability and speed. So he's sort of a forgotten name in this Oakland system that I kind of like.
So without the second system, we're coming in at a solid little bit over an hour. Not bad.
Woo.
We don't have another half an hour of prospects to talk about tonight.
No, all I can throw out there is the all-name prospect of the Oakland system. They have a really good name guy, and that would be none other than the infamous Sky Bolt.
Shit, Zeus.
That's a real
person. Is that his nickname? Zeus should be his nickname. Sky Bolt, come on.
Sky Bolt, that is a real person. His parents definitely lived in a commune.
I feel like they must have known what they were doing.
Totes magotes, man. They knew exactly what they were doing.
The commune, they're I like it.
We had a commune reference. We talked about professional wrestling, and yeah, we got all types of stuff. Angry dads that were polite. We're covering the gamut today.
I think we hit some good topics. Yeah, we're set. A little quick, crisp, and tight episode, I think. I don't fucking know. We'll find out when we listen back. All right, so let's wrap it up. You know me, I'm Michael Halpern. My website, imaginarybrickwall.com. I got my top 200 going on over there. It's going to be like it's gonna be a couple weeks. I'm popping out like 25 either every day or every other day. And on Twitter, I'm at imaginarybrickwall.com, and I'm at Michael C. Halpern. I mean, Twitter doesn't have .com. What am I talking about? I'm just rambling now. Ralph, what do you got?
Ralph Lifshitz, Razzball.com. That does have a .com. On Twitter, you can find me at Ralph Lifshitz, L-I-F-S-H-I-T-Z-B-B.
Say it with us.
You know it. You know it.
You should be saying that along at home as you do it. That's what you have.
You can find me on YouTube, too, if you go to Nickel Press TV. My good friend Andy Singleton over there and I have been working on these sort of three times a week. We do three hitters, three pitchers, and three prospects for 2017 fantasy baseball. They're 10 to 15 minute videos. Go over there, check them out, subscribe to the channel. We've been putting a lot of hard work in over there. Obviously, check out my stuff on Razzball. You can hit me up on Razzball with any fantasy general questions. I do a lot more than just prospects. I scour numbers of major leaguers as well. I'm familiar with
don't pigeonhole Ralph, motherfucker.
Yeah, ask me about anything, man. Like
don't
I said,
pigeonhole Ralph. No one puts Ralph in a corner.
don't put Ralphie in a corner. But peace. I think I'm done. I got nothing else to say. Peace. We out here.
Thanks, Zencaster. Thanks for listening. Later, guys.